This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to this Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. This is podcast number 124. My name is Peter Higgins. You can find me at Compass 3 on Twitter. And I'm here with Henry Viola here at HT Viola on Twitter. And I've got Phil Oakley as my two co-hosts on this particular episode. Thank you all for your fantastic feedback that we had for podcast 123 for our absolute investing gem of an individual with Algie Hall of CityWire. I've seen loads of tweets of you all discussing how we can go about actually implementing elite companies, which Phil obviously has a part of as well with CityWire. And we're going to be talking today mainly about some other stocks, which are not elite companies, but we really appreciate the feedback you gave us for that particular podcast and the encouraging numbers we saw for that particular pod. I've got some fantastic news for you to share with you, ladies and gents, on this particular podcast with regards to the competition and the investing challenge, which we've not mentioned for a little while. Henry's going to have some shout out some names regarding the winners of, I think, probably January and February, maybe even March as well. And we're going to tell you about the prizes as well that we're going to be sharing with you, ladies and gents, for being the best stock pickers on this particular competition that we've got. But firstly, I'm going to quickly just tell you about the markets. I'm going to ask Phil a particular question, followed by Henry, just to throw them under the bus with a random question, as we do. I could see Henry getting nervous already. He's like, whoa, I'm not prepared for this. Right. So we had two bank holidays over Easter. We had Good Friday and Good Monday. Markets were closed. We opened on Tuesday. Everyone was rejoicing. The FTSE intraday went above 8,000. And everyone was singing and dancing. Intraday, the FTSE 100, it's 8,015. And then the market went, uh-oh, something's happening in America. We're not quite sure what's going on. And the trading data was saying that a couple of shares were going to be having a pretty poor day on Tuesday. So the markets gave up some of that movement in early trading and the FTSE and AIM. And then obviously it came out, Tesla, poor data, market's not happy with it. First negative sort of trading update for a number of quarters. Today, the markets went even further and declined even further from their highs. And intraday, the FTSE 100 at 7,882. So you're looking at 140 points-ish from, what, less than 12 hours of trading, right? And that's how fast it can move. When sentiment's good, great, markets move, and they charge off. And when it's not, it runs away with itself. So today we've eked out a little bit of movement on the shares of the FTSE 100, and we finished at 7,937 yesterday, and a little bit today. The miners have been helping us out a little bit regarding the stock market, but everything was going up yesterday. AIM, FTSE AIM all share was at 742. Down just a tiny little bit today, but it's still sitting above the magic 700, which is everybody wants. But again, more and more little companies are delisting or giving up the ghost. So we need to watch that for numbers regarding stuff. FTSE all share is sitting nicely above 4,000 still, at 4,326. So all is good. But we've got to keep an eye on the S&P 500, NASDAQ, and the Dow, because if and when that declines, we'll decline too. Hopefully, as we get the new ISA money coming in within the next few days and next week and the month and so on and so forth of April and May, we will sit nicely above that magic marker of 8,000 unless we get some negative news or sentiment. So I wanted to ask you, Phil, and then Henry, the talk last podcast before last was about the Brit ISA. And everyone was talking about that. We now know it's not going to happen this year. We now know it's probably going to be next year if it happens at all. The conversation that's been had today in the market and the past week or so is this thing about stamp duty, yeah, on investing in stocks and shares. Does it make a difference? Is it something that would encourage people to invest more? Is it something that would enable corporates to actually spend more because there's more value in their shares, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? So just, you know, without any sort of dress rehearsal or whatever, I just wanted to get, you know, Phil's take on stamp duty and then yours, Henry, as investors. You know, I know Phil's majoritively in ETS at the moment, and obviously they're not paying a stamp. But I'm talking about stamp on shares and other entities where you've got to pay the stamp duty. Phil, any thoughts, mate?
Well, yes, I think they should get rid of it. I find it very hard to justify, and I do think I do think it puts people off. It makes the cost of dealing in shares more expensive. You know, you go and buy an American share through a broker and you don't pay stamp duty. I think scrapping stamp duty full stop on not just on shares but on houses would be a good thing as well. If you want to do something to improve the attractiveness of the UK stock market, that would be a very, very easy first step.
Okie dokie, thank you for that. Any thoughts to add to that, Henry? Because you're mainly in shares, aren't you? You don't really use ETFs that much, as far as I'm aware.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm with Phil 100% on this one, Peter. So to me, a tax is there to disincentivize or discourage a certain type of behavior or activity. If you want someone to do less of something, you tax it. And you therefore penalise them for it and therefore discourage their willingness to participate in that activity. If we want to encourage investment in UK shares, scrapping stamp duty, I'd agree with Phil, great place to start. It's only 0.5%, but it is 0.5% of all transactions. And if you think of how many transactions there are buying and selling UK shares, that's a significant volume of money that could be added to UK valuations. So, yeah, as far as I'm concerned, I'd rather see it slapped on cigarettes or alcohol.
Ooh, cigarettes maybe, mate. Steady on the alcohol, please. Come on.
I say that as a lover of Guinness.
Yeah, and rum and other alcohols as well. Sorry, go on, Phil, you want to add?
I think the other thing that, you know, for those of us who've got long memories, you know, remember 27 years ago when Gordon Brown first became the Chancellor and essentially put a tax or removed a tax credit on dividend payments on UK shares. And I think that has done a lot of damage over the years. And again, that's something that could be done to improve the attractiveness of UK shares, get pension funds investing back in the UK stock market. I'm not sure the will is there to do it, but yeah, that would be another thing you could do as well.
Cool. I'm asking this because another conversation was being had today with Merrin Somerset Webb of Bloomberg, and I replied to Merrin regarding the new modelling that's come via Oxera and the CPS think tank. And he's basically saying that scrapping stamp duty on shares would increase long-run GDP by 0.2% to 0.7%, which on the GDP scale, I think is quite significant, you know. And it also said increased business investment by FTSE firms would increase by plus 2.8 billion. To 6.8 billion, and the average person with a DC pension pot would increase by £6,000. So, looks like a win-win all around for everybody. And that's before you start doing what you want to do, Phil, with a sense of scrapping the stamp duty on property and housing. You know what I mean? Which obviously increases the cost of buying any sort of property these days. You know, and with property prices tend to be going in one direction, it makes it more and more, or less affordable for everybody to buy that first property. So, yeah, there you go. Well, thank you, gents, for that reply. I'm going to go to our competition guru now, to Henry. But firstly, I want to tell you about the prizes before Henry tells you who's won January and February. So I've been working behind the scenes, ladies and gents, to try and get us a few prizes this year, for this particular competition. This is for the Twin Peaks Investing Challenge, where you've all that have entered. I think it's 140 odd, if anyone will tell me the correct numbers in a minute, this year. Chosen five stocks. We tried to make sure it was FTSE and AIM orientated this year to get people to focus on the quality and undervalued stocks that are in the UK. And I've managed to secure us books from Harriman House and a 12-month subscription to Investors Chronicle, monthly prizes from Harriman House, and monthly prizes from Sharescope Ionic, who are the sponsors of this particular show. So thank you, Sharescope and Harriman House and Investors Chronicle. And then we've got the overall winner, who will get 15 books, 12-month subscription from Investors Chronicle, and obviously the Sharescope subscription of 12 months also. So we'll see what we can do. If we get anything else, we will let you know. Any of the monthly prizes, we will let you know. I'm going to quickly run through these books that I've got, and which you'll be able to choose from. So the winners that get announced today, please have a think about these books, and I'll try and put a thread together on X slash Twitter for you, ladies and gents, to have a look at. And the books are in no particular order: From Zero to Millionaire by Nicholas Baroub, The Secret Wealth Advantage by Akhil Patel, Pathfinders by J.L. Collins, The Anatomy of the Bear by Russell Napier, The Allocator's Edge by Phil Huber, Inspirational Investing by Amanda Taylor, The Smart Money Method by Stephen Clapham, The Skeptical Investor by John Stepek, Just Keep Buying by Nick Majuli, The Investment Trust Handbook 2024 by Jonathan Davis, The Psychology of Money by Morgan Housel, Investing for Growth by Terry Smith, Investing Your Way to Financial Freedom by Robin Powell and Ben Carlson, and How to Pick Quality Shares by Phil Oakley, and also, of course, Algie Hall, Five Ways to Beat the Market. Those are the 15 books. I'm trying at the moment as well to negotiate with Harriman House to be able to get Morgan Housel's brand new book, which is Same As Ever. But they've only got the rights to it in the UK, and we've got other listeners here that are overseas, and they've not got the distribution for that particular book. So I'm trying to negotiate that if we do get a monthly winner that is UK based resident, they might be able to have access to that book the same as ever. But I haven't got that permission yet, but just keep that in the background as a possibility as well. And then it's a one or the other that you'll get a choice of those two. So it still remains 15 books. You won't get 16 books. Oh, there you go, Henry. I've covered the books. You're
Happy
going to bring us up
days.
to speed. Lots of people are going, what happened to January's winner? What happened to February's winner? Henry's been sitting there for the past 3 months, ladies and gents, with an abacus to get the numbers ready. So apologies. Here, over to you, Henry. Go
An
for it, sir.
abacus would
And
be
don't
high
forget to do it
tech,
3-2-1,
Peter.
Henry. Don't go straight to the winner, mate. Create a bit of suspense. You know what I mean?
Oh, there's going to be lots of suspense because I'm doing this with some runes in a little bowl. Forget the abacus.
Calling bingo.
Exactly. So for those of you that have entered, we've had 141 entrants this year. We've all picked five shares listed on the UK market, and every month I run a little calculation to see how that portfolio of five shares has performed over the preceding 4 weeks. At the end of the month, we declare a winner, and that winner is the person whose portfolio has gone up the most over the preceding 4 weeks. We then reset the clock, and I do the same activity for February, March, April, May, and so on. So we'll have 12 winners throughout the year. And at the end of the year, the person whose portfolio has gone up the most will win the big bumper prize. So, in reverse order for January, We had one James 1&1 on Twitter, whose portfolio went up a very creditable 15.7% for the month. In second place, we had at DJC 37986880, whose portfolio went up 84.6%.
What?
And in first place, oh yes, in first place, beating at DJC by just a hair's breadth, we had at Tiger Want, that's at Tiger Want, whose portfolio went up 85.5%. For those of you that are curious, the outlier in that portfolio was a little company called Helium One, ticker is HE1, whose share price absolutely skyrocketed in January. Very well done.
Amazing.
If you write in to Peter at Tiger Want, we'll get the prize arranged. In February,
Wow.
in third place, we had at Doreen 0551, who gained 10% for the month. In second place, we had at Riz 29 LSE, whose portfolio went up 11.2%. And in first place, I'm very pleased to announce our friend Patchy at PatCat68, whose portfolio went up a fantastic 26.9% for the month. Very well done there, Pat. Again, do write in and we'll get your prize arranged.
Well
I'm
done,
also
Tiger Want
pleased to
and
say,
PatCat68. Very well done. Good numbers there.
We've also got March's numbers as we're now at the beginning of April. I've just run these, so they're fresh off the press. Again, absolutely outstanding results from these portfolios here. These are not returns that I see on a regular basis, certainly, but it goes to show what you can do with a highly concentrated portfolio, and also the peace of mind of not having real money in it.
Yes,
In third
that helps.
place, we've got at Richard Sutton, I think this is, at RCHRDSUT76, whose portfolio went up 22.7% for the month. In second place, we had at Gallon73, 28.5% for the month. And in first place, beating at Gallon73 by 0.1 of a percent, we had
Wow.
at Mike 24775926. These are some fantastic handles, by the way. That's at Mike 24775926, whose portfolio went up 28.6% for the month. Very well done, Mike. Again, if you write in, we will get those prizes arranged.
Thank you very much. Well done, Mike, with that one. What were the stocks in Mike's portfolio, Henry? Have you got them in front of you? Just a couple of the tickers, please.
Yeah, so Avacta, AVCT, INSIG AI, INSG. I think the next one is Zephyr something or other,
Yeah,
ZPHR.
Zephyr. Yeah.
Skincare Biotherapeutics, SBTX, and
Yeah.
WTB, which isn't one I recognise.
WTB, that will be Whitbread, will it? Is
I'm not sure
that
what that one
WTB?
is. Off the top of my head,
I've got Whitbread on the top of my head there, mate. I can't think of anything
it
else for
could well be
WTB.
Whitbread. Let me just have
Yeah,
a quick look
Whitbread.
on
Yeah, Whitbread.
ShareCard.
So he's gone
It
for
is
some really
Whitbread.
tiddly ones, and then he's gone for a blue chip to just wait it up.
Exactly.
Yeah, clever, clever. Well done, Mike. Well done to our winners, Tiger One, PatCat68, and Mike. Well done. Give me a shout or stick. Get into my DM or whatever, and we'll sort out the prizes. Have a think about which books you want for the month, and I'll also have to get your email addresses so I can get ShareScope to contact you for your monthly subscription to ShareScope and trial if you don't already have it. And if you have already got ShareScope, which hopefully you have by now, we can sort out an extension to whatever sort of subscription you've got from the team, and also try and get you if you haven't started with ShareScope yet. To have a tutorial, a one-to-one tutorial, for an hour or so, or whatever time frame they give you, so you can learn all the different tools and solutions that Phil and the team have actually embedded to make things easier for you guys to select your stocks, because Phil has been the brains behind a lot of the stuff that they've done, although he doesn't like to talk. Isn't that right, Phil?
Some of them.
Henry, thank you ever so much for doing those numbers, mate. Absolutely brilliant. I'm really pleased that we've got up to March. We can sit and chill and relax and let people enjoy their books and their prizes and subscriptions to ShareScope now. And apologies for the delay. It's been a bit, we've been busy doing lots and lots of things, but congratulations to our three winners and well done to our individuals that have come third and second as well with some significant numbers there. I am blown away with January's opening the gate and people sprinting out with 85% for a month and Helium One. I've seen the share price since then. Obviously, it's given some of that back, a significant amount of that back. But what a way to start the year for those people. Congrats. Next month we'll also have a look at who's winning the overall competition for the end of April, because that'll be end of the first third of the year. So that should be very, very interesting indeed. But thank you for that, Henry. Thank you ever so much, sir.
My pleasure.
Just sorting that out. You're a star.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Right, Phil. We need you to talk about a stock, mate, that's going to go up 85% in the next month. Have you got one? What have you got?
Well, I don't know about that. I'm going to talk about a
I
stock.
joke.
I'm going to talk about a stock that's actually already gone up a lot, and
Right, okay.
maybe quite a few listeners own this stock or have had it brought to their attention already. The stock is McBride. Ticker is MCB for Bertie. And this is Europe's biggest manufacturer of private label household products. So things like dishwasher tablets, laundry tablets, washing powder, washing up liquid, you name it. Anything that's sort of used in the home. Aerosols is another one that they make, air fresheners. And this is a company that's been an absolute basket case over the years, primarily because it's been dealing with very powerful customers in terms of the major supermarkets. And anytime it gets into an issue with cost inflation, particularly things like plastic, which are like driven by the oil price. It has to wait. It's had to wait quite a long time to be able to get recover its costs. But I think there's a step change going on within private label goods generally. I think more and more consumers are buying them. What's been a slow burn over the years, where a large number of people have gone into their supermarket and bought supermarket own label washing powder or fabric softener, what have you. That's definitely accelerated with as the cost of living has gone up. It's a good way to save money. And McBride is doing very well out of it. It is growing faster than the market, and it's mainly involved in markets like the UK, France, Germany, Spain, Italy. It has a small business out in the Far East at the moment. And this trend, I think, is likely to continue. But what I think is very positive is that they seem to have an improved relationship with the major supermarkets. And the supermarkets love private label because they can make more money from them. They can make more margin from them than selling brands. And the brands are very much on the back foot at the moment. I mean, you only have to walk around a supermarket and see how aggressive brands now are being in terms of their promotions, and they're trying to get a bit of share back from private label. but a lot of this private label growth is sticking. So the relationship is better. They can recover cost better, and there is some volume growth here. You combine that with the ability to keep on not only taking market share, but also to gain more sales with certain customers like hard discounters, which they don't have as much of as they'd like. And you can construct a decent, modest sort of revenue, nothing shooting the lights out, but a decent case here for continued revenue growth, but also improving margin. Companies becoming more efficient, it's generating cash, it's paying down debt. Forecast momentum in this business is incredibly strong. Back end of February, there was an upgrade to full year forecasts. The shares are actually up 255%, okay, over the last year. And that makes you think, I've missed this. Well, yeah, you have missed a lot of it. But the good news is that these shares are only on 5x earnings. And, could these shares go to 8x earnings? Yes, quite possibly. And with earnings momentum, I think these shares have potentially still got quite a long way to run. I think it's a better company than it has historically been, and it's keeping on getting better. Not the greatest business in the world, but one that's on offer at a still very attractive price with a lot of good things happening to it.
Thank you for that, Phil. I think it's interesting because we spoke about I think it was you who spoke about it actually. Reckitt in the last pod, wasn't it? With Algie on board here. And it was showing basically that Reckitt's really struggling. And potentially it's got some long-term issues there, sitting there waiting to kick off possibly. And their revenue streams and profitability has been declining. And you're talking now about McBride's accelerating. It's been looked at in complete opposites. So it's almost like a paradox we're having here now, where the gleaming star was Reckitt, if not Unilever, and the pup or the donkey was McBride, and everybody was like kicking it to the curb and not interested in it because it couldn't get it out of its own way. And it's just the tables have completely turned now, and the profitability is increasing at McBride. The growth is accelerating, etc. The cutting down the debt. Still see the debt there. I've just pulled the numbers up here. One last numbers were 146 million, which sounds quite chunky when you think about it for a company that's generating this the size of revenues each year that they're doing. But it's positive momentum it's got right now, whereas before nobody wanted it. So yeah, I think it's one of those interesting stocks, Phil. I'm obviously minded that already it's gone up 256%, and like you say, I'm probably going to be thinking, but it's one of them stocks I think potentially where people have ignored it and gone, yeah, but it's McBride, it won't last, and it then carries on, and then it carries on some more, and now it's sitting at what is it, a pound odd, yeah.
Just around a pound, yeah.
Yeah, so you've got other people coming out putting analysis on it now saying it could actually go above 110, 115, and so on and so forth. And if the next set of numbers come out again, or price stays where it is, their profit margins increase, it will do another upgrade. So yeah, I like that. And I like the fact it's what we class as a small cap. So yeah, it's got time to grow. And who knows? Some cheeky bugger might decide, actually, we don't want them having all the margins to themselves, and we'll just bolt them onto ours and take it in-house. But who knows? It's always a possibility. Small caps tend to be takeover targets, don't they, Phil?
Yeah, they're a lot easier to buy, obviously, because of their size. Whether they would buy it, someone would come and buy it, I don't know.
Okey-dokey. Henry, any thoughts, mate? Any
I love it.
own brands that you
Yeah,
buy?
I mean, that's a business to me. I've never looked at it before. I've just pulled the figures up on SharePad. I'm gobsmacked that's not doing a lot better than it is. I mean, in terms of price momentum, certainly, but historically, you're right. It's been a dog of a company, and I don't see how or why. It's such a basic business model. You produce a basic good, very liquid, you rip the label off, so it's just washing up liquid, and you stick a Sainsbury's logo on it, and now it's Sainsbury's washing up liquid. Yeah, how on earth can you lose money doing this? I don't understand. To me, this is a super attractive business model, and with all the cost of living pressures we've got on the go at the moment, I would think that this has got a lot of potential to it. So, really interesting name. And like you say, on a PE of 5, I think you said,
Just
to
over, yeah.
me, that's got some really interesting potential for an upgrade if they can
Yeah, I
sort out
think
this
that.
profitability issue.
Yeah, they'd always been squeezed, hadn't they, Phil, by the big boys, and
Yeah.
oh, and at the beck and call as to, oh, we want this, we want that, want this now. And then also the issue of sometimes with these sort of companies, they don't always get paid on time in a timely
Right.
manner, as well with the big boys, Tesco's, you know, et al., Sainsbury's, et al. Just like, yeah, manana, we'll pay you soon. And they've got their own costs, you know, and electricity costs, energy costs, et cetera, plastic costs. We're always, they're always, what's the your favorite word, Phil? Very cyclical regarding the nature of the markets, just beating them above the head every single sort of quarter. But they seem to be getting their house in order. I wanted to ask you, Phil, did they change CEO or CFO, or has anything happened on that sort of front structurally?
I must
What's
admit, I
been
haven't.
what do you think has been the catalyst in the past year for things to shake things up? Is it the cost of living crisis and people just, you know, moving down?
I think it's lots of things. I think it's that. I think it's, you know, management changing the way the business is done. I also detect a change in approach from the big supermarkets. I think one of the reasons why the discounters Aldi and Lidl have been so successful is that they have embraced private label to a lot larger extent than the main supermarkets have, and they've done it by working in partnership with private label rather than a sort of, you know, a cost to be beaten down in a spreadsheet type approach. And you see it with other businesses as well. I mean, Greencore, which is a company that makes a lot of sandwiches for a lot of the
Yep.
supermarkets. That's another company that's benefiting from, I think, from this change of approach. So it's those kind of things really that are making the company more attractive than perhaps it used to be.
Indeed. And Greencore's had a good run. I mentioned Bacor a little while back, and we've talked about the profitability of those two. I spoke to with James One James about that. And I took on board that Greencore is a better quality business, and actually that's share price has done much better than Bacor in recent months. So yeah, and Greencore is probably going to be quite good going forward, as well as more people going back to work and back into their offices. So that should help matters somewhat. Right, I'm
Yeah.
going to talk about a company now, and then we'll go to Henry that I wanted to talk about in the last podcast, and since then they've come out with their full year numbers. So I'm going to go back to the backstory as to what I had prior to this full year numbers coming out on the 27th, and then us going on holiday because I couldn't speak about it because we didn't have enough time with Algae, wanting to focus on Algae talking about elite companies. But this company, in the past 12 months, its shares are up already 180%. And the company's name is Wynwood Limited. The ticker is WNWD. And for me, it's a very, very interesting company. It's up 25% year to date. It's a small cap, or tiddler, should I say, market cap sub 100 million at 97.5 million. Shares outstanding 88.65 million. The last 12 months, its share price range is 33 pence to 125. And Wynwood is an, and this is politically sensitive, I know, at the moment regarding what's going on all over the place, is an Israeli-based company that operates in a predictive maritime analytics. The company's predictive intelligence combines artificial intelligence, which attracts me, AI, and big data to empower global maritime industry with a 360% degree risk management solution to enable customers and partners to understand that the marine ecosystem and its broader impact on safety, finance, and business. Essentially, you've got solutions, trading and shipping, maritime AI, and operational efficiency, risk management. These are solutions that it provides. And it's got loads of blue chip clients, Interpol, London Stock Exchange, NATO, you name it. It's got all these blue chip clients. And that I'm thinking, wow. And came out with a bullish RNS, which I noted in January, basically saying, following good trading throughout the year at a strong finish, board is pleased to report that it expects full year results to be comfortably ahead of market forecast. That was in January. And obviously, it carried on since then. And then in February, it was chosen by Interpol. What is Interpol? If you don't know, it's the world's largest international police organization. So that tells you that the caliber of their kit must be pretty darn good. And then 27th of February, Winward expanded its partnership with the London Stock Exchange Group. Again, you're thinking, what have these guys got under the bonnet that attracts those sort of agencies to want to work with them? So we get to 27th of March and it comes out and it's basically saying, we're sitting here and we've had strong financial results and record customer wins along further market leading innovations and financial highlights, annual contract value up 35% to 35, 34,000 and $0.5 million versus in 2022, 25.5, and revenue was up 31% to $28,000.3 million. Gross margins were up 700 basis points from 79%, sorry, to 79% from 72%, and essentially it reduces losses from minus 12 million to 5 million. And it goes on. It got cash and cash equivalents of 17.3 million versus 22 in December 2022. So the cash burn is not too great, going down 5 million. I think the interesting thing about this one here for me is the momentum and the confident outlook as well, and the fact that it's now saying it's on the cusp of getting to break even this year, which means that next year we're going to be hitting profitability. And the CEO speaks very confidently. And I know we should always take these sort of things with a pinch of salt, but I'll read you what he said here. Amy Daniel, CEO and co-founder of Winward, said, "I'm pleased to have given another year of significant progress for Winward in line with our stated strategy, delivering record levels of ACV and revenue, including substantial growth in our commercial segment. Global trade faces an array of evolving challenges across security, sanctions, and supply chains. In the face of these ongoing pressures, we have further cemented our position across the industry as a trusted partner to governments and businesses of all sizes to help them meet their ambitions. Looking ahead, we are excited to scale the business further and meet the growing need for digitization in maritime market. We are supported in these ambitions by our global and committed team of maritime experts, strong cash position, enabling continued investment into our solutions and people, and high levels of recurring revenue." Then you get Panmure Gordon coming out saying, basically, we're going to raise our price target for the group from 129 to 147. And bearing in mind that Winward currently today is sitting at 105, this is a company that IPO'd nearly 3 years ago now, and it's sitting below where it IPO'd. So I'm thinking here's a chance for this company to actually move on. IPO December 2021 at 155, had a bit of a, as IPOs do, people IPOing it because they want to get out at 155. Share price, as I said, last 52-week low was 33. So you can see from the IPO, the people that were in there went, I'm out of here. Bailed at one at from 155, eventually bailed at 33 pence. That was the bottom in the last 52 weeks. And now it's accelerated, it's gone up 180%. And still loss making. I know Henry hates loss making companies. But revenue's been growing at an annualized rate of 22% for the last 5 years. In comparison, and not necessarily a full comparison to another company that's a little bit smaller in that space. Braemar PLC, market cap of 85 million versus Wynwood's 95 million, is profitable, but its revenues have been declining on an annual rate of 0.5% for the last 8 years. So you've got a loss-making company worth 95 million and a profitable company at 85 million. One's decelerating, one's accelerating. I'm choosing the one that's accelerating with a bit of an AI engine to keep it going, with relationships with blue chip clients like Interpol and United Nations and London Stock Exchange. Wynwood, ticker symbol WNWD, is my stock. I don't own it yet. I'm hoping it comes down a little bit further, and I'll be potentially jumping on board at sub £1. There you go, boys. Another AI stock that no one's talking about. I know Phil's going to hate this because it's loss maker. So I'll go to you, Henry. Be nice.
I was
What are you
going
going
to
to say
say,
about it,
forget
Henry?
Phil, I hate it. I'm
Oh
sorry,
dear. All
Peter.
right.
No.
Oh dear. Two punches to the chin. All right. Go on. You go
So,
first, Henry.
I love the sales pitch, by the way. Like, if they've not got an IR department, they should totally give you a call. Like, his name's Peter Higgins, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sure he's available for the right price. But I love the focus on the blue chip clients, and I totally get what you're saying. If the LSE is sniffing around, great. The thing is, their revenue's tiny. How much does the LSE spend on IT a year? Tens of millions, hundreds of millions? I
Yeah,
don't
yeah.
know. And what are they spending with Wynwood? A couple of million a year? It's a rounding error to them. So to Wynwood, it seems significant and substantial. To the LSE, some director's seen some shiny thing and gone, oh yeah, give him a try. If it doesn't work out, we've lost nothing.
I'm hurting here, Henry. Are you going to say anything nice about it?
Well,
Just say no, and we'll move to Phil.
the caveat to all of this, to my enormous bearishness, the caveat to all of this is that you have picked up on something with the profitability. Now that does pique my interest because you're right. That should be an inflection point for the share price and the company. And the share price is already responding to positive news. Momentum is building. Somebody is acquiring these shares. Now,
Oh, yeah.
if the company becomes profitable, the share price is going to, pop. And in theory, once you've started that journey, if revenue continues and your profit margins continue to expand because you've already developed the software, your margins start to expand, and therefore the revenue starts to grow, your earnings per share start to grow, and that drives shareholder returns. So it could well be, if that trend keeps up, you might have found something that's a multi-bagger here. I don't know. I'm not saying it is, but that, to my mind, is how you get these multi-bagger scenarios. You buy them when they're cheap and loss-making, you wait for them to take off on a positive trajectory. When they take off on the positive trajectory, the market responds, and therefore the shares multibag. What you probably don't want to do is wait until they've already become profitable, and that profit is already baked in, and the growth rate is already baked in, and therefore you're probably not going to get that multibag buying it later.
Indeed. I mean, I wish I picked it up and looked at it earlier, Henry, last year when it was at 30, 33, 35, 50 pence and saw it, but I didn't. I don't own it yet. It's still loss making. It's got some cash. The revenues are small, but I'm looking at it and thinking, let's wait and see. And can the revenues accelerate? Will bigger companies come in and take bigger contracts with them as they actually stabilize? The big caveat for me at the moment is the noise around anything with the word Israel in it, given what's going on the political and war front and geopolitical front, should I say. And that does not help matters at this present time. But given I was going to talk about it in the last pod, I just wanted to put the company's name out there and the potential. And when things, hopefully we'll get some peace over there at some point, we'll see what happens. Okay, I'm already battered and bruised, Phil. So just crack on, mate, and tell me, just hit me where it hurts.
Oh no. I mean, for me, I'd have to like spend a bit of time getting my head around what the company actually does, and what the customer actually gets from it. But by the by, I think the thing that interests me, and I'm just looking at the forecasts on SharePad here. One of the things I look for in a company is something that's called the drop-through rate. So this is, you look at the extra revenue that it adds and see how much extra profit comes from it. Now, if I look at the forecasts sort of between 2024 and 2026, there's about 15 million of extra profit, sorry, of extra revenue coming through. And then there is about, it's going from a loss of 2 million trading profit, trading loss of 2 million to a trading profit of 5 million. So there's 15 million of extra sales producing 7 million of extra profit. So what's that? A 40 odd percent drop through rate. That's quite impressive. That's quite impressive, and tells you that, this is a, a very profitable business once it's achieved a certain scale of revenue. So that's my two penneth on that.
Okie dokie. Well, I'll take that, and thank you, Henry, for the objectivity on it. I think it's essentially, it is one of those stocks which, some institutions were buying and were temporarily wedded to. The lock-in period came and went, and they sold, having IPO'd it at 155, for it to go from 155 down to 33p over the course of under 3 years. I just wish I'd been more alert to what was going on with it. Sub 50p, I would already be holding that particular stock, I think. And waiting for it, as you say, Henry, to get to profitability and back above. Because that's the other thing. Those institutions that didn't get in, are watching it now, I think. And what if it goes back above the IPO price and then becomes and profitable or whatever order it comes in? People then start looking at it. And also, once it goes above the 100 million market cap, there's other institutions can buy it at that stage. 200 million market cap, again, more institutions can buy it at that stage as well. So we'll see what happens with it going forward. Okie dokie. Phil, we are. Henry, do you want to go to your. Sorry, we'll go to your stock, mate, now, shall we?
Yeah, absolutely. I've just got the one this week.
Go for it.
It is a UK company, a £1.2 billion market cap IT consultancy, which provides digital services and Workday implementation. If you can't guess what it's called, the company is Kainos Group. The ticker is KNOS. Now, the company provides effectively professional services consultancy to develop IT functions within different businesses. So they help companies to identify issues and then develop and implement IT-based solutions to those issues. They help to envisage, plan, prove, and execute IT-based transformation projects. In addition to this, they also implement something called Workday, which, if you don't work in a large corporate entity or you haven't previously, Workday is a little bit like a business operating system, is how I describe it. Effectively, the company throws all of its financial and workload requirements into this big database, and the database then allows the business to analyze that financial and workload information and create operating decisions based on financial and human capital management. So effectively, how much money have you got? How much work do you need to do? How many people have you got to do that work? And how do you mesh those three things together to manage your organization most efficiently? Workday is used by companies to deliver everything from employee engagement surveys, so finding out how happy your staff are, to workload management, seeing how efficient and effective your employees are, to managing spend planning and financial analysis across the business, so helping companies to make capital spend decisions on a large scale. The business has got a really solid return on capital of about 40%. As most professional services and software companies do, it's not particularly capital intensive. It pays a nice 2.5% dividend yield, which is 1.8 times covered. And most interestingly to me, it's forecast to grow revenues at about 10% a year out to 2026. And also to grow earnings per share at about 12% a year out to 2026. So this is a business that is, really doing very well for itself. It's net cash, so it's got a strong balance sheet. So for those of you out there that are worried about interest rates impacting debt maturity, you don't have to worry about that. And interestingly, price performance has been really, really weak the last couple of years. Even year to date, it's down 12%, and yet revenue and profits are going in the right direction. So I think this is a company that the market has got absolutely wrong. I think it's a really great opportunity to buy a really great business. And I honestly think that if it carries on declining in share price value, that someone like Accenture could very easily come over the pond and snaffle them up in a private takeover. So I think that's one listeners might want to go and do a little bit of research on.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEETS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to SharePad today using the TWINPEETS promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit shareScope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Okie dokie. Yeah, it's another tech one, and our tech stocks are so unloved, and it continues and it persists. And I'm not sure what the some companies have got to do really to get the attention of investors and in institutions. Phil, your first thoughts about Kainos? Is it one that you've looked at before? Any thoughts about it?
Not from memory. I don't think I've ever looked at this. It has a lot of characteristics of software companies in terms of, very profitable, very cash generative. My sort of concern about this is that, whilst there's growth there, which is always nice to see, the forecast momentum in this business over the last 12, 15 months has actually been coming down. Analysts have been moving their forecast down. Not by a lot, but even so, there's, if the one thing that, I've learned a lot over the years is that you can talk until you're blue in the face about fundamentals and how great a business is. Essentially, the stock market likes momentum. It likes stories that get better, and outlooks that get better. And it seems that what's holding this company back at the moment is that the outlook hasn't been getting better. In fact, it's been moving down ever so slightly over the last sort of 15 months. That's something I think you need to have a look into before you pull the trigger on this. There may be, perfectly valid reasons for it, but I would look into that, because that's usually a sign that it's not usually a great sign. You want to see forecasts holding up and arguably moving up. And you're not seeing that with this one.
Very valid,
Yeah,
Phil. Very
I
valid.
have to agree with you there. I like my tech stocks, but like you say, it's a tech stock, so a reasonable PE, and the PE doesn't match the revenue and profitability growth pace, percentage, returns, etc., etc. But is that their fault? Is it because of delays in contracts, etc., etc.? I don't know. But as with all these things, it's a reasonably sized company, and unfortunately, if they don't sort themselves out, a larger institution like you mentioned, Henry, Accenture or otherwise, are going to go, yeah, okay, let's put this one to bed, and let's take it out of business, and we'll lose another UK listed company from an overseas predator, and they'll then, make it more efficient, and make it part of their own internal growth rather than, as an independent. So yeah, good company. And I know that lots of the tech guys, including our good friend George O'Connor, he likes Kainos and other tech stocks like this. And let's hope that they can actually turn it around and accelerate the growth. It's definitely one to keep an eye on. And at some point or other, Henry, it will become one of those stocks which sorts itself out and I think would then go, and we'll see it just moving. And no one will be looking at it because if people get distracted by what's going up and the stuff that's going down, they're no longer looking at it. And right now it's sitting there, isn't it? Waiting for the next catalyst. What's it going to be? And if that catalyst arrives, it'll be off to the races. So yeah, good stock. I like it. I have looked at it before, and it's one of them that I definitely keep an eye on. So thank you for that, sir. Right, Phil, you were talking about forecast momentum and revenue momentum, and the stock I've got and I'm talking about here hasn't got either of those.
Mine hasn't either. Mine
So
either.
it is a former COVID darling. It is a dog. It is a donkey. It was trading at over. It's a US stock. Sorry, I'll tell you the name, folks, before we get going. It's called Unity Software Inc. And the ticker is just U, dollar U. And it is a former COVID darling. Its shares were trading at over $200 a piece back in 2020, 2021. And now we're sitting at 25. Last time I looked, it was 25.78. And it's got a market cap now of 10 billion, just shy of 10 billion. So what was it at 200, nearer to 100, 80 to 100 billion market cap, because everyone loves a software company. But this is a company that's been through the ringer over the last 18 months, and it's essentially going through a process of restructuring. Managed a pretty large merger, which they're still trying to put to bed at the moment. And essentially, it's restructured itself into a pure play software company. And I'll give you the description of what it says here about it all. Unity Software provides a platform for creating and growing interactive, real-time 3D, as in for the techies out there, RT 3D content and experiences. So everyone's talking about goggles now and HoloLenses and AR and VR. I see all these individuals sitting on trains doing that. You're thinking some of them are doing that without the goggles on, by the way, but that's by the by. And it's sets of software including artificial intelligence solutions, supports creators through the entire development life cycle to so they can build, run, grow augmented and virtual reality devices. The platform consists of two complementary sets of solutions, creates solutions and grow solutions. Create solutions is a real both set of tools, and developers th use these tools and services across a range of industries ranging from games to aerospace, construction to retail, medical to manufacturing and others. And essentially grow solutions offers customers and the ability to engage their user base to monetize their content from 2D puzzle games to multiplayer, multi-platform games, and other 3D interactive content. The additional bit that I like about this particular company, despite the restructuring, is that it's also got military applications and contracts already. But they've been slashing and burning the company, accelerating the restructuring. They, where are we now? I'm losing track of the time. Dates. February. They sold off the digital twin professional services arm to Capgemini, their real-time 3D technology arm. They sold that to Capgemini. That's going to finish in the next half of the year. And that I'm a little bit like concerned about because that was quite a big, large revenue stream for them. And the CEO is basically saying Unity had reached a point in its growth where the opportunity for us in the enterprise market had outpaced our ability to scale fast enough to meet client demand, hence the reason they sold it. I'm like, yeah. So it came out in February as well in the Q4 and essentially released numbers which were very, very bad. posted negative earnings per share of 66 cents versus what were expected of 22 cents positive earnings per share versus what analysts expected. So it was a massive miss. So the shares got spanked back in February. And guidance now is way below projections, which they had before, of 415 million. Dropped down to 415 million, sorry, from 536 billion. So it's all negative, negative, negative. So why am I talking about this? Well, they've reduced their staff by 25%. They're going to be essentially by the end of this year a pure play software company. You've got the likes of Google, Meta, AWS, Amazon, and everybody else, Nvidia, talking about spatial computing. What's that about? Everything to do with this, everything to do with health tech, where you can just see inwardly on AR and VR and mixed reality. If they can turn this ship around, then I think there's a possibility that this company has a rebirth. They've got a new CEO called Jim Whitehurst, and he's ex-IBM. And I think if anybody can actually turn the ship around, it would possibly be him. And AR and VR is going to be, I should say it. I'm going to say it. I'm going to say it. Oh, I feel nervous saying it. The next AI.
Oh.
But oh, the pigeons off, people. I'm joking with you. But I see it as a possibility. They need to turn this around. Ex-CEO's gone. They've reduced their staff significantly. Now it's a turnaround restructuring story. Can it turn it around? Will it take time? Yes. What happens if it turns around? This stock's doubles once the turnaround is as accelerated. So that's where I'm at with it. Is it a dog at the minute? Yes. Is it could it go to the vets and get put down? Yes. But I like turnaround stories, and the military contracts are still in place. And yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, we'll see. There you go, Phil. Phil's got his hand over his mouth like he doesn't want to puke. Oh, he's laughing his head off. Let's go to you, Phil. Get it out of the way, mate. Mock me all you want. But for those not on YouTube, come across and see Phil's face now. He's just red with rage, going, "How dare
Don't
you bring that crap to this podcast?" Go on, Phil.
Yeah, we had
You're
elite
laughing.
companies last week.
Why
What have we
don't laugh
got this
so hard
week?
at one of my stocks, Phil?
I think you've taken the words out of my mouth.
Oh dear.
No, definitely, I would not go anywhere near this. It's horrible. It looks horrible. It just I can think of nothing to recommend this.
I've got to say, Peter, I've got to pile in with Phil here. This looks
Sorry,
like a car
sorry. Wait,
crash.
wait one, wait one, wait one. Is that all you're going to say about it, Phil?
Well, we don't want people to turn off.
Over to you, Henry. Go on.
If we have still got anybody left, ladies and gentlemen, we aren't setting up a competitor to elite companies called terrible dogs of the market. No, I honestly, I don't know. I don't know what you're thinking. This is definitely one where I'm scratching my head here with Peter, and occasionally he pulls these names out, and I go, "What? I don't see it at all." I mean, to me, AR and VR, you've just got to look at Meta, ladies and gentlemen. Mark Zuckerberg stood up, what, 3 years ago and said, "We're going to create this multiverse thing. It's all about the goggles, right?" And he spent how many billions, was it, with the brightest
Yeah.
developers in the world, and he managed to create Animal Farm from 1990. Nobody wanted to use it, nobody wanted to buy it, and that was the company that changed their name to do this. On the flip side, you've then got Unity Software, who are trying to do something similar, and all I can see in my
Oh,
head
come on,
is
that's a bit
Mark
harsh.
Zuckerberg's floating.
It's spatial computing. Listen, you're going to see more and more commentary about spatial computing going forward.
That
Okay,
one I
for the
that
engineers, for the military, yeah, looking in Anyway, even reading, Phil. Phil, you love your books. You'd be able to go like that in your goggles and read rather than looking on your Kindle. Anyway, it's a dog. I know it's a dog. Phil's flexing for more. For those who are not looking on YouTube, Phil's flexing for more uppercuts. Go on, Phil.
This is a very dangerous space, okay?
Yeah.
I think the meta, Henry points out about Meta. Meta is losing shed loads of money in its in this part of its business. The whole thing about I just cannot buy into the sort of the view that people are going to be spending lots of time with goggles on their heads doing stuff. I think there are, I mean, there are well-known sort of apparently problems with motion sickness wearing these things, I've been told. Where I do think it's interesting is the augmented reality, AR, it's called, digital twins, which can get used by industrial companies, to create things like virtual factories and where they can test out new bits of kit or new production methods. My view on that is just buy Nvidia. Just buy Nvidia is a major player in this space in terms of the chips. You're best off buying
To add to
Nvidia.
what you're saying there, Phil, that to me interrupt you a minute, the positive would have been if they'd kept the digital twin bits. They just sold that chunk off to Capgemini, which doesn't help matters either.
You're
You
not
know,
helping here,
so that's
Peter.
another negative. I'm not helping matters. I'm just telling you what the reality of what's going on. So we're sitting at 10 billion now. A year from now, we'll have a conversation about it. It'll either be a $5 billion company, still a 10, or it'll be a 20. So let's see. Anyway.
I
The
think you
dog's a
should
dog.
buy, I think you should buy these shares, Pete. Put a small bit of money in them, and any profits donate it to a worthy cause, because
Yeah.
you'll have earned
Ooh, he's on
it.
top form tonight, ladies and gents. Honestly, kick a man while he's down. Right, Enmi, briefly before we go to Phil with his last stock. Tell us about the charity, mate. Centrepoint.
Yes.
What's been happening? We've had not a chance to mention it for a couple of weeks. So for those of you that have got pent-up demand to make a donation to Centrepoint, Henry's going to bring you up to speed and tell you where to find the Just Giving page.
Well, I'd like to rewind the second before I dive straight into the link, because the weather has started to improve. It is getting warmer. The nights are drawing out, and it might feel as though, people on the streets, they'll be all right now, it's summer. And actually, things couldn't be further from the truth. The charity that Peter, Phil, and I are fundraising for this year, Centrepoint, deals with a whole range of people facing a whole range of issues to do with homelessness. Some are in a precarious home situation where they may imminently be about to become homeless. Some are couch surfing and have no permanent place of residence. Some are in and out of shelters and are seeking permanent employment. But the consistent trend with all of them is that they really need an arm putting around them. And a friend to point them in the right direction and start to put one foot in front of another in a positive direction and start to get their lives back on track. And you would truly be horrified at the amount of people in this country that are facing horrendous scenarios at home with domestic abuse and unloving families that can't afford the rent, they can't afford the heating. And all they are looking for in life is a little bit of help. And that's what Chan. That is what our charity Centrepoint does. Puts an arm around these people and it helps them to get back on track in life. Now, all of us listening here today, some of us have got large portfolios, some of us have got small portfolios, some of us have got no portfolios at all, but just enjoy the show. But all of us could afford to spend just a few pounds donating to support a cause that helps people that really have got nowhere left to go. And I would really, truly encourage all of you that are listening to this show, that have listened to previous shows, and that will listen to future shows, stick your hands in your pockets and just donate a few pounds to a really good cause, because there are an awful lot of people out there that are going to need help all year round. And just because it's not freezing cold and dark all the time doesn't mean that they're not there. and doesn't mean that they don't need help. So Peter, Phil, and I this year are raising money for Centrepoint UK. You can find the link online if you go to www.justgiving.com/page/twinpeakschallenge24. That's justgiving.com/page/twinpeakschallenge24. All donations are very gratefully received. Thank you very much.
Thank you for those words, Henry. Really resonate with me that we're still doing stuff in and around Leicester regarding all of those things. And you're absolutely spot on. It doesn't get any better in the summer or the spring or when weather seems to be, it's not, no ice and frost out there. It's just as bad. And the difficulty we've got now is a lot of councils are being told that their budgets are being cut come April. So they've even got even less money to support the homeless and those affected by temporary homelessness, or currently lots of them are in permanent situations of homelessness, and I've used up the goodwill of individuals, so are no longer even able to sofa surf. So anything we can do to support homeless charities, including Centrepoint, will be gratefully received. So thank you for that, Henry, and we'll if you can make a donation, please, please, please do so. Thank you ever so much. Phil, you've got one last stock and then we're going to call it a day, mate. Do you want to keep this one short and sweet?
I will.
Hopefully it's one that's profitable and not a dud. And we can have some unity. See what I did there?
Yeah, I'll keep it brief.
Can
This one is
be positive about it. That's what I meant, Henry. Come on.
this one is profitable, very profitable, but it is a dog. It's another dog. And it's a big dog. It's British American tobacco, and
Hey.
this is a I mean, I totally get why people just turn off now and say I'm not touching tobacco shares. I get that. Governments are making it more and more difficult to sell not only tobacco but also vapes, and it's a very, very hard business to be in. And it's been getting harder. But these businesses are tremendously resilient because they're selling products that people keep coming back and buying. And I think it's important to be open-minded about these things, whether the three of us would buy this is by the by. It's about just looking at situations in the stock market and discussing them. And what's very interesting to me is that we talked about your stocks without forecast momentum. This has been a stock with terrible forecast momentum, but there's a sign that the downward trend may have bottomed. And things maybe start to be looking up. It's had a terrible time the last couple of years, particularly in America, consumers trading down from its premium brands of cigarettes to cheaper brands. There's been a lot of problem with illegal vaping and so on, and profit forecasts have come down. Having said that, this is a company that still has profit margins of about 45%. Generates lots of cash flow, is still very much in business. It is developing its what it's called its new generational products, so the vaping and the like. And there is some underlying potential, some underlying growth in this business. Not much, but some. So this business is far from dead, and it trades on just under 6.5 times earnings with a dividend yield of 10%. That dividend is expected to grow by about 4% a year for the next 3 years, earnings a little bit below that, but still some growth. And the company has just sold out of a stake, some of a stake in an Indian company that it owned, and it's using the proceeds to buy back shares. It's buying back about 1.6 billion pounds worth of shares, which is about, I don't know, 5% or no, about 3% of the market capitalization. And buying back these shares at 10% is just sort of 10% dividend yield. It's a no-brainer because it actually, never mind enhancing earnings, it enhances cash flow. And if you look at the valuation of this and Imperial Tobacco, which is on an even lower rating, and again that has forecast earnings growth and dividend growth, these shares look incredibly cheap. If you look across the Atlantic, Altria is on 8.5 times earnings, and Philip Morris, which is by far the sort of star performer in this sector, is on 14 times earnings. And there has been, pressure by activist investors in British American Tobacco to take the listing to New York away from London. It's not going to do that, by the way, but you can see why. I mean, that's the case. You could take the old FTSE and list it on New York, couldn't you, on that basis? But what I'm saying is that you could have made this argument for the last goodness knows how many years, and the shares have been horrible. Even with a high yield, you've still actually lost money because the share price has declined faster than the yield. But you just wonder that whether there comes a time when this will end, and sentiment towards this company is just absolutely dire, and you just wonder, it's not going bust or anything like that, that is this a company that can recover? Because the expectations baked into the share price are just nothing.
It is one of those, Phil. It's obviously been one of those companies that the likes of Woodford, Woodford back in the day, Anthony Bolton back in the day, all made lots of money on, compounding the total returns on that on those particular stocks. But they've not really gone anywhere for some time. But sitting in a 10% yield with a buyback, it looks like something that you would hold instead of sitting with the cash sitting on your portfolio. Buy that and trade around the ranges potentially. And if they can get around all this noise around youth vaping and potential tax that some people are saying could be positive for them or negative for them, it's one of them that doesn't really need to do a lot to give you some returns. The question I would ask you is, what would be the catalyst for something to be better than just a steady return and a dividend? Can you see a catalyst that could actually, sorry for the using the word, ignite the share price? Anything?
Not really. I mean, usually you think like, the catalyst is like something like a takeover or private equity, but this has still
Too
got
big.
a, stock market value of 53 billion. It
Yeah,
is
there's not many buyers out there. Yeah,
it's a
yeah.
massive company, still a massive company. I don't know. I mean, if I'm this company, I'm probably, given that the yield is not really propping up the share price, you'd be almost better off cancelling the dividend completely and just using the cash flow to buy the shares back. Instead of paying it out as a dividend, use it to just buy the shares, shrink the shares, because at this price, it's just a no-brainer.
Yeah, it's a good, it's, yeah, 10% yield, steady, not loss making, profitable still. Yeah, and all these emerging markets, people are still smoking. The number of smokers is going up, not down. It's only across Europe and US and UK that smoking numbers are going down, but vaping levels are going up. So it's an interesting one.
It's
I've
a
never
hard
smoked, so
sell.
I
I
it's
think the
yeah,
problem you're going to
I'm
have
going to smoke,
is
but that's the
probably
appeal. Go on,
Sorry,
Henry,
the problem
sorry.
you're going to have is probably my generation, and I'm probably going to set an awful lot of people off here with what I'm about to say, but there is no valuation in the world that would convince me to buy this company. Absolutely none. It produces no social good whatsoever. Tobacco is an evil product. I think smoking is dreadful. It causes tremendous societal damage. And I think an awful lot of people my age look at it the same way. I might be wrong in that. And I don't necessarily think it's an age problem. And, by the same argument, do you then stay away from alcohol stocks or gambling stocks or weapons stocks? Or there's a whole host of ethical drivers. But to me, it just genuinely is untouchable because of what it produces.
You do wonder,
And
Henry.
I think fund managers, if you take me as a retail investor, I represent what, a quarter of the market, probably, if that. As a retail investor, I suspect the majority of the market is made up of institutions. But institutional fund managers are going to be coming under increasing amounts of pressure to have an ESG policy. And an ESG policy sort of precludes you from having things like oil and gas and tobacco. And, as individuals, it doesn't necessarily matter whether we think that those things are ethical or not. That's not what I'm getting at. It's more, if we just take it as a situational thing, if the funds can't, if I won't invest and the funds won't invest, who is going to invest? If it's too big to buy, is this just continue going
The
to slowly
institution was
trickling?
some institutions have been in bats for decades, Henry, and they're not going to be selling because they want security of a company that's, I don't want to use this the wrong way, a company that's not going to go out of business overnight. They've been
I
around
don't disagree with
for
that. I mean, somebody must own these shares, but they've held it
oh
on a
yeah.
gradually declining PE, on a gradually declining share price. This is not a business that's screaming healthy buy and hold.
No. Sorry, Phil, you were going to say, go on.
I agree with a lot of what Henry said, and that's why it's so fascinating, because I do think this has been, a very easy stock to become a victim of an ESG agenda. But it's interesting. Just looking at the shareholder list, the largest shareholder is Capital, who are, have a reputation for being pretty shrewd managers, shrewd fund managers, and I do wonder whether this will become some kind of, you'll see increased activism here. You've had stirring with it, and that's not means, the share price, this could be dead money, yeah. But it also, if an activist comes and gets involved, and starts playing around with the strategy, again, cancel the dividend because obviously people that obviously hasn't attract and use it to re you know repurchase the shares, shrink the shares, grow the earnings per share. I think you'd see the share price go up. It's a difficult one. It's a very controversial company, but there'll be listeners to this podcast who are, maybe looking for off the wall ideas. It's high risk to an extent, but it's a lot of that risk is surely reflected in the price. But it's one to just watch, I think, because I think we can learn a lot as investors by looking at situations like this. It's not just whether you would buy the shares. It's just a fascinating case study of what happens to businesses at a certain stage in their lives facing a lot of headwinds. So that's the reason why I brought it up today.
An interesting point,
Thank
Phil. I
you.
like that. You don't have to have a position to watch and learn.
Absolutely. No, thank you for that, mate. Very, very interesting stocks there. I just want to say, ladies and gents, thank you all for your feedback from the last pod. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please share it on Twitter slash X and across social media. Let us know your feedback. If you want to carry on kicking me whilst I'm down, tell us what your thoughts were on Unity. But please tell us about what your thoughts are about Phil's picks and also Henry's pick as well. And please, 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 keep in touch with us on YouTube. Subscribe on YouTube if you haven't done so already, and keep sharing the feedback, and get in touch with me regarding your prizes, your prize winners, regarding your books and subscription to ShareScope, and keep subscribing to Phil's Substack, which is at Investing Stuff. And please also, I keep forgetting to say this, Henry. Tell the ladies and gents about your blog, where it is, where to find it.
Oh,
Also,
blimey.
because Henry occasionally writes articles, he's busy. He's a young man. He's got a young wife. He hasn't got time to be writing stuff every week like Phil has, you know? So tell us
So
about where you find
I
your
do
stuff.
also have a blog. Yeah, I do also have a blog. I don't write as regularly as Phil. I usually publish once or twice a month. And you can find me at theethicalentrepreneur.com. I've got
Oh,
a
that's why you
blog
don't
with,
like tobacco. But you like
well,
your
there
drink,
you
don't you,
go.
mate? Hey.
I'm just
Yeah,
waiting
yeah.
for the rocks to come flying in, to be honest, with everyone telling me why
All
I'm
the
wrong.
anti-smokers coming.
It
All the
just,
smokers coming to your blog. Sorry, I interrupted you. So tell them where to find the blog.
you
Sorry
know,
again, please.
it is it's theethicalentrepreneur.com. You can subscribe to keep up to date with my postings. When I do post, it's usually every 2 weeks. I've got a section on there for beginners, so new articles for investors that are new to the stock market. And I've also got the blog categorized by section. So if you're particularly interested in quality or income or risk management, you can go and see my articles on those topics as well. So that's theethicalentrepreneur.com.
Brilliant. And Phil, one more plug for Investing Stuff. Where do they find it? What's the URL?
Investingstuff.substack.
Simple as that, folks. Okay, ladies and gents, that is a wrap. That is podcast 124 over. Thank you for listening to Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. That's the end of the first one for this quarter, date 3rd of April. Thank you for listening. Look forward to hearing your feedback. Thank you for your continued support. Take care. God bless you all. And for those that are still on Easter break, enjoy. Bye-bye.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.